Teddy's bedtime story.
Teddy, it's time for you to go to bed.
But I'm thirsty.
You've already had a drink of water. I don't want you to have too many drinks of water, so it's time for you to go to bed.
Oh, well, I haven't had a story.
Oh, story. You have to have a story every night.
Yes, I have a story every night. I can't go to sleep without a bedtime story.
Well, all right, let's see. What'll it be? Fountain of Fair Fortune, Tale of the Three Brothers, Warlocks, Hairy Heart.
Well, I don't want to hear any of those.
Let's see, how about The Wizard and the Hopping Pot?
Oh, I've heard those stories so many times. I want a different story.
You know, he's never heard any Muggle bedtime stories.
Muggle bedtime stories? I can't imagine they'd be very interesting.
Well, why don't you give him a choice? Teddy, would you like to hear a Muggle bedtime story?
I would love to hear a Muggle bedtime story, please.
Really?
You know, you've never heard any Muggle bedtime stories. You might like them.
Oh, I don't know. How about, Teddy, I have an idea.
What?
How about Elizabeth and I have a contest? We each tell you a story. I'll tell you a wizard story. And Elizabeth can tell you a Muggle story. And you tell us which is the best one.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Why is it ridiculous?
Well, because... I just think that it's not right to pit us against each other like that.
That's because you know the wizarding bedtime stories are the best.
I do not. That is not the case at all. I just think that... Well, I just think it's not right.
I would love to do that. I want to hear a wizard story and I want to hear a Muggle story. And then I'll tell you which is the best story of all. I'll even give you a prize.
You'll give us a prize? What prize would that be?
I'll draw a picture of an illustrating of the best of the stories. I'll draw a picture for you. For the winner. Whoever wins, I'll draw a picture.
Well, that sounds lovely. Okay, who's going to go first?
I think that I would like to hear the wizard story first.
All right, wizard story first. Well, let's see, you've nixed all those other ones. How about... Oh, what haven't I? How about Babbity Rabbity and her cackling stump?
I would like to hear that, please.
All right, you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. Babbity Rabbity and her cackling stump. A long time ago, in a far-off land, there lived a foolish king who decided that he alone should have the power of magic. He therefore commanded the head of his army to form a brigade of witch-hunters and issued them a pack of ferocious black hounds.
Oh, scary!
Yes, all right. At the same time, the king caused proclamations to be read in every village and town across the land, wanted by the king, an instructor in magic.
Dad?
Yes.
What's an instructor?
An instructor is a master, someone who teaches you things.
Oh, all right.
All right. No true witch or wizard dared volunteer for the post, for they were all in hiding from the brigade of witch hunters. However, a cunning charlatan with no...
What?
What?
What a charlatan?
Charlatan, that's a trickster, someone who plays tricks.
Oh, all right. Go on, please.
Yes. A cunning charlatan with no magical power saw a chance of enriching himself and arrived at the palace claiming to be a wizard of enormous skill. The charlatan performed a few simple tricks that convinced the foolish king of his magical powers and was immediately appointed Grand Sorcerer-in-Chief, the king's private magic master. The charlatan bade the king give him a large sack of gold so that he might purchase wands and other magical necessities. He also requested several large rubies to be used in the casting of curative charms and a silver chalice or two for the storing and maturing of potions. All of these things the foolish king supplied. The charlatan stowed the treasure safely in his own house and returned to the palace grounds. He did not know that he was being watched by an old woman who lived in a hovel on the edge of the grounds.
A what?
What? A hovel?
What's a hovel?
A hovel is a terrible old shack. Where underprivileged people live, yes.
Oh. All right, please go on.
Her name? Would you like to know her name?
Yes, please.
Her name was Babbity, and she was the washerwoman who kept the palace linen soft, fragrant, and white. Peeping from behind her drying sheets, Babbity saw the charlatan snap two twigs from one of the king's trees and disappear into the palace. The charlatan gave one of the twigs to the king and assured him that it was a wand of tremendous power.
Oh, what a liar!
Yes, I know. That's because he's a charlatan. It will only work, however, said the charlatan, when you are worthy of it. Every morning the charlatan and the foolish king walked out into the palace grounds, where they waved their wands and shouted nonsense at the sky. The charlatan was careful to perform more tricks so that the king remained convinced of his grand sorcerer's skill, and of the power of the wands that had cost so much gold.
Ah, he fooled that old king!
Yes, he did. One morning, as the charlatan and the foolish king were twirling their twigs and hopping in circles and chanting meaningless rhymes, a loud cackling reached the king's ears. Babbity, the washerwoman, was watching the king and the charlatan from the window of her tiny cottage and was laughing so hard she soon sank out of sight, too weak to stand.
"I must look most undignified to make the old washerwoman laugh so," said the king. He ceased his hopping and twig-twirling and frowned. "I grow weary of practice. When shall I be ready to perform real spells in front of my subjects, sorcerer?"
The charlatan tried to soothe his pupil, assuring him that he would soon be capable of astonishing feats of magic. But Babbity's cackling had stung the foolish king more than the charlatan knew.
She laughed at that old king!
Yes, she did.
He was angry!
Yes, he was very angry. Shall I continue?
Yes, please.
Tomorrow, said the king, we shall invite our court to watch their king perform magic. The charlatan saw that the time had come to take his treasure and flee.
Because he couldn't do any magic, really, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And then he would run away because he was a big, fat, old liar.
Yes, indeed, that's what he would do.
Alas, your majesty, it is impossible. I had forgotten to tell your majesty that I must set out on a long journey tomorrow.
If you leave this palace without my permission, sorcerer, my brigade of witch hunters will hunt you down with their hounds. Tomorrow morning you will assist me to perform magic for the benefit of my lords and ladies. And if anybody laughs at me, I shall have you beheaded.
Oh, no!
Yes, I know. The king stormed back to the palace, leaving the charlatan alone and afraid. Not all his cunning could save him now, for he could not run away, nor could he help the king with magic that neither of them knew. Seeking a vent for his fear and his anger, the charlatan approached the window of Babbity the washerwoman. Peering inside, he saw the little old lady sitting at her table, polishing a wand. In a corner behind her, the king's sheets were washing themselves in a wooden tub. The charlatan understood at once that Babbity was a true witch, and that she who had given him his awful problem could also solve it.
"Crone!" roared the charlatan. "Your cackling has cost me dear. If you fail to help me, I shall denounce you as a witch, and it will be you who is torn apart by the king's hound."
Old Babbity smiled at the charlatan and assured him that she would do everything in her power to help.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Why would she help that old liar?
Well, you'll see if you continue to listen.
All right.
The charlatan instructed her to conceal herself inside a bush while the king gave his magical display and to perform the king's spells for him without his knowledge. Babbity agreed to the plan, but asked one question.
"What, sir, if the king attempts a spell Babbity cannot perform?"
the charlatan scoffed. "Your magic is more than equal to that fool's imagination," he assured her, and he retired to the castle, well pleased with his own cleverness.
"Is something going to happen?"
"Well, of course something's going to happen. It's a story."
"Oh, yes, oh, please continue."
The following morning, all the lords and ladies of the kingdom assembled in the palace grounds. The king climbed onto a stage in front of them with the charlatan by his side.
"I shall firstly make this lady's hat disappear," cried the king, pointing his twig at a noblewoman.
From inside a bush nearby, Babbity pointed her wand at the hat and caused it to vanish. Great was the astonishment and admiration of the crowd, and loud their applause for the jubilant king.
"Next I shall make that horse fly," cried the king, pointing his twig at his own steed.
From inside the bush, Babbity pointed her wand at the horse, and it rose high into the air.
"A horse in the air! That must have been funny!"
"Yes, I'm sure it was very funny." The crowd was still more thrilled and amazed, and they roared their appreciation for their magical king.
"Please, not really magic, is he, Dad?"
"No, he's not really magic at all."
"And now," said the king, looking all around for an idea,
and the captain of his brigade of witch hunters ran forward.
"Your Majesty," said the captain, "this very morning Saber died of eating a poisonous toadstool. Bring him back to life, Your Majesty, with your wand."
And the captain heaved onto the stage the lifeless body of the largest of the witch-hunting hounds.
"Ooh!"
"Yes, I know, very scary." The foolish king brandished his twig and pointed it at the dead dog. But inside the bush, Babbity smiled and did not trouble to lift her wand, for no magic can raise the dead.
"That's right!"
"Yes, that is."
"And that's why, when my mummy died, nobody could bring her back to life."
"Yes, son, that is why." When the dog did not stir, the crowd began first to whisper and then to laugh. They suspected that the king's first two feats had been mere tricks after all.
"Why doesn't it work?" the king screamed at the charlatan, who bethought himself the only ruse left to him.
"There, Your Majesty, there!" he shouted, pointing at the bush where Babbity sat concealed. "I see her plain, a wicked witch who is blocking your magic with her own evil spells. Seize her, somebody, seize her!" "Oh, no, he's evil!"
"Yes, he is." Babbity fled from the bush, and the brigade of witch hunters set off in pursuit, unleashing the hounds who bayed for Babbity's blood. But as she reached a low hedge, the little witch had vanished from sight, and when the king, the charlatan, and all the courtiers gained the other side, they found the pack of witch-hunting hounds barking and scrabbling around a bent and aged tree.
"She has turned herself into a tree!" screamed the charlatan,
and dreading lest Babbity turn back into a woman and denounce him, he added,
"Cut her down, Your Majesty! That is the way to treat evil witches!"
"Oh, no!"
An axe was brought at once, and the old tree was felled to loud cheers from the courtiers and the charlatan.
"Oh, no, Dad, is she dead? I hope she's not dead!"
"Well, you'll have to hear the end of the story to know."
"All right, please continue."
However, as they were making ready to return to the palace, the sound of loud cackling stopped them in their tracks.
"Fools!" cried Babbity's voice from the stump they'd left behind. "No witch or wizard can be killed by being cut in half. Take the axe if you do not believe me and cut the grand sorcerer in two."
"Ow!"
The captain of the brigade of witch hunters was eager to make the experiment, but as he raised the axe, the charlatan fell to his knees, screaming for mercy and confessing all his wickedness. As he was dragged away to the dungeons, the tree stump cackled more loudly than ever.
"By cutting a witch in half, you have unleashed a dreadful curse upon your kingdom," it told the petrified king. "Henceforth, every stroke of harm that you inflict upon my fellow witches and wizards will feel like an axe stroke in your own side, until you will wish you could die of it."
At that, the king fell to his knees too and told the stump that he would issue a proclamation at once, protecting all the witches and wizards of the kingdom, allowing them to practice their magic in peace.
"Very good," said the stump, "but you have not yet made amends to Babbity."
"Anything, anything at all," cried the foolish king, wringing his hands before the stump.
You will erect a statue of Babbity upon me, in memory of your poor washerwoman, and remind you forever of your own foolishness, said the stump.
The king agreed to it at once, and promised to engage the foremost sculptor in the land, and have the statue made of pure gold. Then the shamed king and all the noblemen and women returned to the palace, leaving the tree stump cackling behind them.
Is she dead, Dad? Is she dead? Tell me!
You'll find out in a moment. When the grounds were deserted once more, there wriggled from a hole between the roots of the tree stump a stout and whiskery old rabbit with a wand clamped between her teeth.
Is it Babbity?
Yes, it is. Babbity hopped out of the grounds and far away, and ever after a golden statue of the washerwoman stood upon the tree stump, and no witch or wizard was ever persecuted in the kingdom again. The end.
Oh, I like it! I'm clapping, I like it, I like it! Next, please.
Next, please? No, I don't think you get two stories in one night. You'll have the next story tomorrow night.
I can't wait until tomorrow night, and that was a very short story. And you know that I do not have lessons tomorrow.
You don't have lessons tomorrow? No, darling, it's Friday. It's Friday? Yes, it's Friday. He doesn't have lessons tomorrow.
I told you, Dad, I don't have lessons tomorrow.
Yes, all right. Well, shall we have the other story then?
Yes, we shall. And I am going to tell you a story of another washerwoman, Teddy. It is the tale of Mrs. Tiggy Winkle.
Mrs. what?
Mrs. Tiggy Winkle.
You can't be serious.
What? I didn't make fun of the woman named Babbity in your story. Were you making fun of the woman named Mrs. Tiggy Winkle?
I don't know, it just seemed a rather silly name, that's all.
Silly? Why are you arguing? This is my story.
Well, yes, we're dreadfully sorry, Teddy. All right, darling, let us hear the story of Mrs. Tiggy Winkle.
Stop it.
The Tale of Mrs. Tiggy Winkle. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. Once upon a time, there was a little girl called Lucy, who lived at a farm called Little Town. She was a good little girl, only she was always losing her pocket handkerchiefs.
Oh, does she get in trouble?
Well, sometimes, listen. One day, little Lucy came into the farmyard crying. Oh, did she cry so?
I've lost my pocket handkin. 3 handkins and a penny. Have you seen them, Tabby Kitten?
The kitten went on washing her white paws, so Lucy asked a speckled hen.
Sally Henny Penny, have you found 3 pocket handkins?
But the speckled hen ran into a barn, clucking,
I go barefoot, barefoot, barefoot. That's a funny speckled hen. Why do they go barefoot?
Well, hens don't wear shoes, you see.
Oh, I see. All right. Please continue.
Yes, I will. And then Lucy asked Cock Robin, sitting on a twig. Cock Robin looked sideways at Lucy with his bright black eye, and he flew over a stile and away. Lucy climbed upon the stile and looked up at the hill behind Little Town, a hill that goes up, up and up into the clouds as though it had no top.
Oh, it sounds very tall.
Yes, it's very tall. And a great way up the hillside, she thought she saw some white things spread upon the grass. Lucy scrambled up the hill as fast as her short legs would carry her. She ran along a steep pathway, up and up, until Little Town was right away down below. She could have dropped a pebble down the chimney.
Oh, she was very high up in the air.
Yes, she was.
Was she afraid?
Well, I don't know. I suppose I would be. Would you?
I'm not afraid of anything.
You're not afraid of anything?
Nope, nothing.
All right. Well, she was a girl, and you know, girls are sometimes afraid of things.
All right, then. Please continue.
Yes. Presently, she came to a spring bubbling out from the hillside. Someone had stood a tin can upon a stone to catch the water, but the water was already running over, for the can was no bigger than an egg cup. and where the sand upon the path was wet, there were very small footmarks of a very small person.
How small?
Oh, very small.
Like as small as an elf?
Well, very small, I'm not sure, but definitely, probably as small as an elf.
Okay, okay.
Lucy ran on and on. The path ended under a big rock. The grass was short and green, and there were clothes props cut from bracken stems, with lines of plaited rushes and a heap of tiny clothespins, but no pocket handkerchiefs. But there was something else, a door, straight into the hill, and inside it someone was singing.
Lily white and clean, oh, with little fields between, oh, smooth and hot, red rusty spot, never hair be seen, oh.
I like that song. Will you sing it again to me, please?
Again, really?
Yes, I want to hear it one more time, please.
All right.
Lily white and clean, oh, with little fields between, oh, smooth and hot, red rusty spot, never hair be seen, oh.
I like that song.
Well, thank you very much. Lucy knocked once, twice, and interrupted the song. A little frightened voice called out,
"Who's that?"
Lucy opened the door, and what do you think there was inside the hill?
I don't know what was inside the hill.
I'll tell you. A nice, clean kitchen with a flagged floor and wooden beams, just like any other farm kitchen. Only the ceiling was so low that Lucy's head nearly touched it. And the pots and pans were small, and so was everything there.
Oh, do elves live there?
Oh, just listen.
Fairies?
No, just listen. All right. There was a nice, hot, singy smell, and at the table, with an iron in her hand, stood a very stout, short person staring anxiously at Lucy. Her print gown was tucked up, and she was wearing a large apron over her striped petticoat. Her little black nose went sniffle, sniffle, snuffle, and her eyes went twinkle, twinkle, and underneath her cap, where Lucy had yellow curls, that little person had prickles.
Prickles!
Yes, indeed, prickles. Can you think what it might be?
I don't know.
All right.
Who are you? Said Lucy. Have you seen my pocket handkins?
The little person made a bob curtsy.
Oh, yes, if you please, My name is Mrs. Tiggy Winkle. Oh, yes, if you please, I'm an excellent clear starcher.
And she took something out of a clothes basket and spread it on the ironing blanket.
What's that thing? Said Lucy. That's not my pocket handkin. Oh, no, if you please, That's a little scarlet waistcoat belonging to Cock Robin.
And she ironed it and folded it and put it on one side.
What? Is she washing their clothes?
Yes, she is.
That's funny. Tell me more.
Then she took something else off a clothes horse.
That isn't my pinny,
said Lucy.
Oh, no, if you please, that's a damask tablecloth belonging to Jenny Wren. Look how it's stained with currant wine. It's very bad to wash,
said Mrs. Tiggy Winkle. Mrs. Tiggy Winkle's nose went sniffle, sniffle, snuffle, and her eyes went twinkle, twinkle, and she fetched another hot iron from the fire.
There's one of my pocket handkins, cried Lucy, and there's my penny.
Mrs. Tiggywinkle ironed it and goffered it and shook out the frills.
Oh, that is lovely,
said Lucy.
And what are those long yellow things with fingers like gloves? Oh, that's a pair of stockings belonging to Sally Henny Penny. Look how she's worn the heels out with scratching the yard. She'll very soon go barefoot,
said Mrs. Tiggy Winkle.
Why, there's another handkersniff, but it isn't mine, it's red. Oh, no, if you please, that one belongs to old Mrs. Rabbit, and it did to smell of onions. I've had to wash it separately, I can't get out the smell.
There's another one of mine, said Lucy.
What are those funny little white things?
That's a pair of mittens belonging to Tabby Kitten. I only have to iron them. She washes them herself. There's my last pocket handkin, said Lucy. And what are you dipping into the basin of starch? Though little dicky shirt fronts belonging to Tom Titmouse. Most terrible particular, said Mrs. Tiggywinkle. Now I'm going to finish my ironing and I'm going to air some clothes. Elizabeth!
Yes, darling?
I love Mrs. Tiggywinkle.
You do?
Yes, and you know what?
What?
I think I've figured out what she is.
Would you like to tell me?
Yes, I would.
What is she?
She's a hedge pig.
Yes, darling. She's a hedge pig. She's a little hedgehog with little prickles all over her little face.
I love her. Can I hear some more, please?
Yes, you may.
What are these dear, soft, fluffy things?
Said Lucy.
Oh, those are woolly coats belonging to the little lambs at Skelgill.
Will their jackets take off? Asked Lucy.
Oh, yes, if you please 'em. Look at the sheep mark on the shoulder. And here's one marked for Gatesgarth, and three that come from Littletown. They're always marked at washing,
said Mrs. Tiggywinkle.
Oh, I know one, and so that you could tell the sheeps apart. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And every one of the sheeps has their own coat, yes?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, is there more?
Yes, there's more. And she hung up all sorts and sizes of clothes, small brown coats of mice, and one velvety black moleskin waistcoat, and a red tail coat with no tail belonging to Squirrel Nutkin.
Squirrel Nutkin? Who's that?
Well, there's another story about Squirrel Nutkin, and if you like this one, another time I can read you a story just about him.
I would definitely like that.
All right, let's get back to Mrs. Tiggywinkle, shall we?
Oh, yes, please.
All right, and a very much shrunk blue jacket belonging to Peter Rabbit, and a petticoat, not marked, that had gone lost in the washing, and at last the basket was empty. Then Mrs. Tiggywinkle made tea, a cup for herself and a cup for Lucy. They sat before the fire on a bench and looked sideways at one another. Mrs. Tiggywinkle's hand holding the teacup was very, very brown and very, very wrinkly with the soapsuds, and all through her gown and her cap there were hairpins sticking wrong end out, so that Lucy didn't like to sit too near her.
Oh!
Yes, Teddy?
I want to have tea with Mrs. Tiggywinkle in her small house with their small pots and pans, and I want to have tea with her.
Yes, wouldn't we all, darling? I would too. When they had finished their tea, they tied up the clothes in bundles, and Lucy's pocket handkerchiefs were folded up inside her clean pinny and fastened with a silver safety pin. And then they made up the fire with turf and came out and locked the door and hid the key under the door sill. Then away down the hill trotted Lucy and Mrs. Tiggywinkle with the bundles of clothes. All the way down the path, little animals came out of the fern to meet them, and the very first that they met were Peter Rabbit and Benjamin Bunny.
A rabbit and a bunny?
Yes, and do you know what?
What?
There's stories about them, too.
Really?
Yes, and would you like to hear them sometime?
Oh, I would love it.
All right. And she gave them their nice clean clothes, and all the little animals and birds were so very much obliged to dear Mrs. Tiggywinkle, so that at the bottom of the hill when they came to the stile, there was nothing else left to carry except Lucy's one little bundle. Lucy scrambled up the stile with the bundle in her hand, and then she turned to say good night and to thank the washerwoman. But what a very odd thing! Mrs. Tiggywinkle had not waited either for the thanks or for the washing bill. She was running, running, running up the hill. And where was her white frilled cap and her shawl and her gown and her petticoat? And how small she had grown, and how brown and covered with prickles. Why, Mrs. Tiggywinkle was nothing but a hedgehog.
I knew it!
Yes, you did.
I knew she was a hedge pig. I knew because I would like to have one for a pet, because they're very sweet.
Yes, they are.
There's just one more thing. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, I would.
All right. Now, some people say that little Lucy had been asleep upon the stile. But then how could she have found 3 clean pocket handkins and a penny pinned with silver safety pins? And besides, I have seen that door into the back of the hill called Catbells. And besides, I am very well acquainted with dear Mrs. Tiggy Winkle. The end.
I love that story, Elizabeth!
Did you love it?
Yes, I did, and I want to hear Mrs. Tiggywinkle again tomorrow night.
You do? What about Babbity Rabbity?
Well, I enjoyed the Babbity Rabbity story.
You enjoyed it?
Yes, I enjoyed it very much. But do you know, Dad?
What?
I had heard it before.
Yes, I know. I know you'd heard it before.
And you know Elizabeth's story is new.
Yes, I know.
And you know that it has a hedgehog in it.
Yes, I know it has a hedgehog.
And did you know that I wanted a hedgehog, Dad?
Yes, I knew that you wanted a hedgehog.
Did you know that if I had a hedgehog, did you know what I would name it?
What would you name it, son?
I would name it Mrs. Tiggy Winkle!
Yes, I'm sure you would. All right, we don't need to be bouncing on the bed. Teddy, all right, Teddy.
I would name it Mrs. Tiggy Winkle, and she would do my washing, and then I would have some tea in a very small house.
Teddy!
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, that's well enough, but now it's time for bed. And who will be getting a drawing as their prize? Whose story was the best? Can you guess? Yes. Whose story was the best? Let's tell us, and then we can go to bed.
Well, Dad, you know that I love you.
Yes, Teddy, I know that you love me.
Okay, well, I wanted to make sure, because I think that my favourite story is the story about Mrs. Tiggy Winkle Hedgehog. You get a prize, Miss Elizabeth.
Well, thank you very much. Are you going to draw me a picture?
Yes.
And what might you draw me a picture of?
I might draw you a picture of a very small brown Mrs. Tiggy Winkle, but it will be a surprise.
That's all right. Well, thank you very much, darling. Now have a kiss.
Yes.
Thank you. How about give your dad a kiss?
Oh, of course I'm going to give my dad a kiss. Dad?
Yes, darling.
Are you mad at me because I picked a story of Mrs. Tiggy Winkle and not the story of the charlatan?
No, I'm not mad about it.
May I give you a kiss, Dad?
Yes, you may give me a kiss. All right, thank you very much. Now, please go to sleep. And if you're very good and don't ask for any more water or to get up or anything, you can hear a story about Mrs. Tiggy Winkle tomorrow. Or maybe you can hear a story about someone named Peter Bunny. No, Peter Rabbit and Benjamin Bunny. Yes, and Squirrel Nutter.
He's not a nutter! Squirrel Nutter! Daddy, he's not a nutter!
You just said that on purpose. I didn't say it on purpose. You did! His name is Squirrel Nutkin, not Squirrel Nutter. All right, then. Well, have a lovely sleep, darling, and we'll see you in the morning. Good night, right? We love you.
Good night. I love you both, and thank you for the lovely stories.
Yes, you're welcome, Mr. Teddy. Now go to sleep. Good night.
Good night. I'm going to dream about Mrs. Tiggy Winkle.
Yes. All right, good night, darling. And that is the end of your story for your birthday. And I hope you enjoyed it. Yay! I didn't write anything down and that was all improv. Aren't I awesome? No, I'm just lazy. Anyway, enjoy and happy birthday. And maybe in the future you'll get to hear another story competition, which Elizabeth will probably win because she's a much better storyteller. I think anyway. So goodbye. Enjoy your story. Bye.